Welcome to Literary Loitering. We're part of the Geek Show Podcast Network, specifically the Geek Show's dedicated arts, books, and culture podcast. I'm Graham, and this week I've been joined by Sarah.
Hello.
Rob.
Hello.
And Andrew.
Hello.
So, how are we all coping with lockdown?
I feel a bit like Sylvester Stallone in that movie where he was in prison.
Sorry for the delay in my responding. I need to get used to the fact that there's exterior monologue as well as interior monologue.
Yes, I think I'm already heading towards the sort of Brian Wilson circa 1971 stage of it. But one plus side of it is we've all had a lot more time to read, right? Andrew, right?
Yes! I certainly have had more time in which I could have read books. That is a true statement.
What's everyone been reading recently?
Trash.
That's a good start.
As usual, I've been focusing my efforts on all sorts of Eastern trash.
Okay.
Like some kind of light novel raccoon.
Well, less of the Japanese stuff, more of the Chinese stuff. There's one I've been reading recently called Scholar's Advanced Technological System. Now, I'm sure in Chinese that means a lot more than it does in English, because the English translations of these titles are just amazingly bad.
Yes.
They always sound a bit odd.
Yeah. A bit Google Translate.
But yeah.
This one actually caught my attention because it's heavily, heavily about maths. It's very much kind of a near future type science fiction.
Of the future.
Well, when I say near future, I mean that it's the kind of thing that you can foresee in the next 5 years or 10 years. Mm. So it's that kind of science fiction. But it's about
maybe
a guy,
sooner if they're self-isolating.
Yeah, maybe sooner if they're self-isolating. But it's about a guy who, he's already studying maths and somehow he becomes it's one of those stories where he becomes really good at remembering and processing calculations. Mm. And so he starts excelling at maths and he starts winning awards for maths theorems and stuff like that and then expanding it. What I like about it is that it's nowhere near as nationalistic, i.e. racist, as loads of other Chinese novels that are out there.
Yes.
It's a rarity in that respect, because there's loads of this Chinese fiction which is very, very nationalistic. And this one isn't. This one is actually, well, to say, look, there are really smart people all over the world. We just happen, this one just happens to be Chinese.
Oh, fair enough.
Goodness, that's a depressingly low bar, isn't it?
Exactly.
I was reading some Chinese literature today. I reread Red Rose, White Rose by Eileen Chang because I'd just seen a film version of it with the great Joan Chen, and I'd forgotten how deeply, deeply sad and lovely that story is.
What's it the story of?
It's the story of a working class man from China who goes to study abroad, and he also wants to find a wife, but he's haunted by a memory he had of meeting a Chinese student in Edinburgh, and it becomes a sort of Madonna whore complex in his mind, you know, the red rose of the liberated student, the white rose of the woman he settles for, and it's a really acute and sad story. I think she was great, Eileen Chang.
It's quite tragic that he only ever runs into two types of woman. And that binary must be very restricting for him.
Oh, I know, yeah, and it certainly doesn't approve of that. You know, it's...
Not only yeah. that, I mean, if the woman's red, maybe she should see a doctor.
I mean, the white one has room for concern, given that she's Chinese.
Well, no. The Chinese have been obsessed with white skin, just like the Japanese. It was a sign of wealth, wasn't it?
Yeah, yeah.
It meant that they didn't have a tan from working in the fields.
Mm. So I read that. I read Agnes Grey by Anne Bronte.
Really?
Yes.
You're having a colour-themed book session, aren't you?
Interesting coinkydinky.
Is it?
Well, yes. We've been reading The Tenant of Wildfell Hall.
Oh,
also
wow.
By Anne Bronte.
Are you suddenly royalty, Sarah?
What? Did I not boast about this extensively before?
It's just the we, I think, that threw people.
Ah, yes. Okay, so... sorry. So I've been reading a chapter down the phone to my girlfriend who lives in Shipley. Ah. And then we'll sort of swap over the night after. So sort of managing isolation in that way.
Ah, well, right.
That's really
okay.
Cool.
That's cool.
I like the idea. I should do it to my friends, whether they want it or not.
Oh God, we've given Graham inspiration.
Actually. It's a bit wordy in places, and like the paragraphs are about 5 miles long in places.
Yes, same with Agnes Grey.
But it also has a really nice feminist aspect to it.
Yes,
that I'm very much enjoying.
Anne was very much the firebrand of the Bronte family. Mm-hmm. I think people often miss that because Emily was so, I don't want to say outspoken, mad, I think would probably be a better description. But I just because Anne wasn't as demonstrative, shall we say, as Emily could be, does not mean she was not an incredibly forthright and headstrong woman.
Mm-hmm. I have a question. And it's just suddenly occurred to me, right?
Mm.
The word feminist.
Yeah.
What's the male equivalent of the word feminist? Is it masculinist? Because that just sounds wrong.
I don't know. Is it?
I think the official term is knobhead.
Do you see what I mean, though? Just looking at it from a purely from
linguistic
like perspective, you know.
I don't know. I mean, there's androcentric, but I don't know. It's interesting that there isn't such a word invented, and it isn't because, you know, men are so lowly down the pecking order that we haven't even thought of such an idea.
But exactly.
I think it may possibly be because they have the...
There isn't any need
well,
for
there isn't
it.
A need.
Yeah, it's just there's always that duality when you have male and female terminology. And so you always have like a female version and a male version. And I just suddenly thought, is there actually a male version of feminist? Is it masculinist? Is it maleist?
Out of all of the various versions that have come up either in fiction or in the dumber parts of the internet, I think Meninist is my favourite because it amuses me to say it.
It is amusing, particularly as certain people will think, oh yes, because they, you know, they live in Pennsylvania and shun electricity.
Because I know chauvinist, but chauvinist, I don't understand why that applies to, you know, because I don't know what the word chauvin means or chauvin, is it?
It sounds French, and it's generally pejorative anyway.
Yeah, that's
what
so
is the
it roots wouldn't
of
be
chauvinist?
A, let's have a look. Chauve. Oh, like in the olden days when people used to play chauve halfpenny.
Yeah, it's another word for Pancake Tuesday.
Relating to or characteristic of a chauvinist.
Helpful.
Very helpful.
Is that a chauvin?
He may have been one of the great painters.
Is it like, does it derive from builders who are like really proud of their wheels?
Etymology. Let's have a look. 19th century, named after Nicolas Chauvin, a Napoleonic veteran, there's your French link, noted for his extreme patriotism, popularised as a character by the Cognard brothers in Cocarde Tricolore of 1831, of which we're all incredibly familiar.
So hang on, so chauvinist means extreme patriot then?
Yeah, it's not masculine. I don't know how it evolved into its current meaning.
That's a bizarre twist, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Language be weird like that.
It do be weird like that.
I'm beginning to see why Susie Dent likes her career path.
Yes. Oh, boy.
Anyway, I lied. I have done her books.
Oh, God, I was going to go on to the news. I just assumed there was no hope whatsoever there.
Right, double punch. I've done her two books.
What? Wow.
Well, one book and one audio book.
Okay, that's
still
good.
Thing.
So, this is... No, I haven't mentioned it before. I mentioned it before on 4Panel. There is a new online service I've been using called Serial Box.
I remember this. You were telling me about this before.
Yes, it's basically kind of an online subscription service where you basically subscribe to an audiobook and it releases, well, audio and like actual book that you can read.
Mm.
It basically releases a chapter every week.
Right.
So, yeah, on 4Panel, I was talking about Thor Metal Gods, which is a fun little Marvel Comics thing they've been doing.
Mm. Mm.
And then I've also been listening to The Vella, which is written by a team of Becky Chambers, Rivers Solomon, S.L. Huang, and Yoon Ha Lee.
Okay.
And it's a really interesting sci-fi book. It's set in the very far future, so human civilization has spread out all across the galaxy and is now basically facing a massive crisis as the universe is starting to die, plants are starting to become inhospitable, and it's basically led to just a massive refugee crisis.
As right.
Literally, like, billions of people have to flee their home planets to go other places.
Gosh.
Some places not, you know, not that willing to take them in.
Shocking.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's weird. You always wonder, where do they come up with this stuff?
Well, it sounds quite far-fetched.
Or fair thatch. Like a good roof.
Yeah. And the series follows a soldier named Asala Siku and her companion Nico, who is like the child of one of the big planetary ambassadors, as they get involved in this big conspiracy sort of revolving around the Vella, which is this massive refugee ship that Nico's father initially just once found, kind of because it's a good-looking political career move and, you know, elections are coming up.
I'm just fascinated by the name Asala Siku.
Yeah, me too. It sounds like...
Not much effort went into that name, though, did it?
Yeah, well, it's this big, like obviously very politically resonant with current times, as well as being just like this big, interesting sci-fi idea of, I mean, what do you do once entire planets start just getting wiped out?
Yeah, I mean, the amount of people that would involve that's billions, I guess, is it?
Yep.
I mean,
so it's massively scaled up.
More than it would take to fill a raft, so it passes the Sajid-Javid test.
And in addition to that, I have been reading Ian Shaw and Paul Nicholson's British Museum Dictionary of Ancient Egypt.
Oh, how cool.
Ooh, that sounds interesting.
Yeah, I mean, it's one of those subjects I've always, like, I was really into it as a kid when I was learning about it in school. And it's kind of, I've always been a bit sad that a lot of that knowledge I've kind of lost throughout the years.
Yeah.
No, it's neat to be relearning this kind of stuff.
Awesome.
Also, very important information that we all need to know. So, during the unified period of Egyptian history, most of Egypt was split into provinces known as nomes.
Nice.
And one of these provinces had a capital, which was called Crocodilopolis.
Oh, really?
And that's the best name ever.
It really is.
There's a crocodile-headed god in there somewhere.
Sebek, yes, as any H-bomber guy watcher would know.
Yeah.
I would be very happy if I lived in one of the gnomes that had such a wonderfully named capital. The whole thing would just be a laughing gnomes.
I was going to say, please rephrase. Please rephrase the idea of living in one of the gnomes.
And you would be happy because ancient Egypt, excellent administrative infrastructure.
Yep.
Well, that's good.
It's very pleasing.
People tend to remember that a bit less than the massive pyramids, don't they?
Great admin.
Do you know the description now is, because I've finished reading Ayoade on Top, and it's actually heading in that direction now.
Oh, it is a good book. I'm glad you're enjoying it.
I'll have to send it to you, Sarah.
I'm not waiting for it, so until we meet again.
Okay.
That could be a while.
I would also like to borrow it at some point.
Oh, well, you could post it to Andrew.
Yeah, Mick is supposed to be doing his pop culture paper round for us. So he offered.
Fair enough. But yes, shall we do some news?
Yes.
Yeah, the news we can do.
It's quite auspicious that Andrew has mentioned that thing where they publish chapters at regular intervals.
Mm-hmm.
Because somebody is doing that on Vogue's website.
Is it a novel? Dickens?
It's not Dickens, which is a shame because he's due a comeback.
Is it Madonna?
No, the unfortunate news is that it is Lena Dunham, but keep going, because
I was going to say, well, it's probably for the best that it isn't Charles Dickens, but I'd take Dickens over Dunham.
It's going to be published one chapter a day, Monday through to Friday. It's called Verified Strangers. And it's about a 30-something woman who is addicted to dating, according to the blurb. I don't know how medically sound that diagnosis is.
I have a question. If it's going to be published Monday to Friday, does that mean it's only 5 chapters long? Please say it's only 5 chapters long.
I don't know, but I think the good thing is about this is that Dunham is promising to take a vote after each chapter for what should happen next.
Oh, God, no.
A system that I think cannot possibly be abused by the internet.
Oh, does she not remember Bawty McBawtface?
it's Novelly McNovelface.
The last thing you do is ask the internet to vote on anything. I thought everybody knew that.
I'd say it was going to be like Microsoft's Tay, but since this is Lena Dunham, there's a chance the internet might make it less racist.
Yeah, what are the chances of that, Graham?
I'm very curious to see what this 30-something singleton is going to do once the Joker beats Robin to death with a crowbar.
Yeah. It's good for me. I think it's been far too long since the last great novel about Bigfoot, and God willing, as soon as I've registered on Vogue's website, that's what we're getting.
I mean, hell, even Donald Trump, what's the word? You know, when you live in that pink fog and everything is just kind of...
Alzheimer's?
Yeah, even as pink elephants on parade as Donald Trump is, right? Even he knows you don't ask the internet to vote on anything.
Yeah, he's not crowdsourcing from the internet. He's crowdsourcing from Jared Kushner, which is arguably worse.
Well, Jared Kushner is Legion, as we know, and I don't mean the Marvel character. I mean, look at him. He's got, like, middle name is Damien written all over him.
The first man who has ever looked like an unconvincing waxwork of himself. Yeah, other people are spending their quarantine doing something a bit better than this, I promise you. In particular, and I'll just wait for the Independence horrible autoplay-ridden site to load up, Stella von Koskull, who lives in London. She is an actor, so obviously she's used to long periods of inactivity.
Sorry,
that's...
That's the best description of an actor.
And she's been spending quarantine delivering books around Putney, Barnes and Fulham. She describes herself as a book fairy, saying, "I have tons of books at home and I'm getting through this time by reading loads. So I decided to use my one exercise a day to bike my extra books around the neighbourhood to anyone who needs some entertainment."
Sorry, what were the three areas again?
Putney, Fulham and another one.
It was
that London, basically.
Because the way you said it, Putney something another, sounded like A, a solicitor's firm, or B, some really unknown bookshop chain.
Well, maybe it will be after this.
Yeah. Also, I hope
that's a really sweet idea.
So. Yeah.
Yeah. I just hope that by book fairy, she actually means she has put in place some arcane and confusing laws with regards to book borrowing. And if you break them, you will be dragged into the realm of the city and forced to, like, dance at balls for all of eternity.
By book fairy, I mean I steal your newborn children and replace them with a copy of Middlesex by Geoffrey Eugenides. We should probably point out that she doesn't do that.
No.
Hey. As far as we know, she doesn't do this.
So if you leave a book under the pillow, does she take it away?
That would be it.
At night. Oh, my God.
I mean, you'd have to leave your window open during a pandemic, but worth it, am I right?
No.
You'd lose some teeth in the negotiation, but apart from that...
Just another Friday night out, then, is it?
Those Londoners, I don't know.
Yeah, in the current situation, people have been describing everyday acts of kindness as miracles, but a museum in Utrecht is about to remind us of the real thing. They have a dial-up menu on their phone system where you can order a miracle.
What?
Yeah.
Are they sure they're not thinking of pizza?
Are they sure that you're not thinking of dining up Angela Merkel? And she just comes along, talks to you from the garden.
Well, she won't be because she's self-isolating.
Well,
she can isolate in the garden, and also she is stepping down, isn't she?
But also, I agree with Andrew that pizza is a miracle.
Yes, the Museum Catherine Convent in Utrecht has put on an exhibition about miracles in art, you know, depictions of classic biblical stories and the like, and they have a phone option list. If you ring up, option one will be to hear about a miracle experienced by a staff member, Simone, who survived the 2004 Indian Ocean tsunami. Option three would be to record your own description of a miraculous event, which may be showcased in the event. But option two is to request a miracle. It's a dial-a-miracle service.
Wow. Who does that get through to?
God. No, I don't know.
Is this a bit like that old BBC kids show Rent-A-Ghost?
It Yay. Is exactly like Rent-A-Ghost. The museum spokesperson, Rosa Dan Veelen, says it was just a bit of a joke before the coronavirus, but it would be very nice now if people put their requests on the website. That would be a very good idea. Is it me, or does it sound like she's making this up as she goes along?
She's making this up, and this could go horribly, horribly, horribly wrong, because the first time a kid turns up, saying,
"Oh yeah,
please can you bring so-and-so back?" Somebody who's passed away during the virus, that's when it all falls down on them.
No, they just need to say, "Now you want Father Christmas," and just, like, foist it on him.
Yeah, we should stick to things that we know we can achieve. Like, I wish Lena Dunham could waste all of her quarantine time writing Batman fan fiction.
Can we pay to have that happen?
Someone who has experienced a bit of a miracle recently is Tony Ross, the children's author, who has seen an unexpected windfall from coronavirus. In 2001, he wrote a book for children called I Don't Want to Wash My Hands.
How prescient.
Yeah, really so.
Oh, please don't. I had someone recently saying that they would never get this coronavirus because they don't wash their hands. And I froze when they told me this. And my brain started processing all of the times when you need to wash your hands. And this person was saying they never wash their hands.
Ever. What was their reasoning behind that? Do they think it builds up the body's natural immune system to a virus that has only just evolved?
He didn't have a reason.
Okay.
He just didn't.
Fair enough.
I mean, you certainly can't argue with that logic.
Because there isn't any.
Literally, it is not possible to argue with that kind of thinking.
Exactly.
Yes. So Sales of I Don't Want to Wash My Hands, whose main character, the little princess, is taught about the importance of hand washing in preventing germ transmission, have gone up over the last month by more than 2,000%.
Wow.
Oh, fabulous.
Oof.
It's one of those things, isn't it, where now that self-publishing is really easy, Amazon in the future is just going to be like the Library of Babel, where any book that could possibly exist will exist. There'll be someone who has written a book called How to Stand Directly 2 meters Behind Someone Else. And if they'd had to go through a publisher, they'd have just gone, well, it's a bit niche, isn't it? But well, now...
Yeah, but I mean, you know, my stalking memoirs, they didn't really sell well the first time.
So that's someone who's done well from it. Another person who's seen increased relevance from everything going to hell is, somewhat inevitably, Stephen King.
Naturally.
Yeah, he has decided to remind his readers on the importance of good hygiene in a way that is very un-Tony Ross by publishing an audio excerpt from the audiobook of The Stand, his novel about a pandemic that wipes out most of humanity.
Wow. Do you know what I find amazing is the amount of times we can reference a Stephen King story in Literary Loitering. He's always present.
I suppose
there's always some angle that he's coming in at.
I suppose what I said about Amazon is also true of Stephen King, that he has written so much that there will be something.
Yeah.
I mean, just today I was out and about, saw a car and a big dog.
Yes. Price is given to any listener who can relate anything from their recent life into the plot of the novel Dreamcatcher, by the way.
I can. I was in this Alaskan wilderness one time.
Oh, fair play to the guy. He just, like, he's got a great body of work, a big body of work.
And that's one of the great things about horror, isn't it? It allows you to confront your fears and think, what would happen if I accidentally killed a load of people before you walk out of that bathroom without washing your hands?
Yeah. Is that what he did? Is that what happened with the Dark Tower? He didn't wash his hands?
Yes, the Dark Tower is obviously a cautionary tale about making sure you check the date on that burrito before you eat it. So I normally like to have a link, and I guess the link here is Appalling Eldritch Horror from Beyond Our Imaginations, because we've got some news about the movie Cats.
Oh, what a body blow. We thought it was all over.
I'm just eating. Do you have to?
Yeah, I'm still worried that at some point I'm going to wake up and I will actually still just be watching cats.
I had sushi. I had sushi for lunch.
Oh, dear.
I mean, the film isn't called Fish. I don't know what you're worried about there.
Because I had fish for lunch. I've got that. I had that fishy breath and now I'm going to be attacked by anthropomorphic people, cat things.
And even worse, one of them's going to be James Corden.
No, yeah, one of them's going to be James Corden. The other one's going to be Jason Derulo.
Jason Derulo is Rum Tum Tugger, a sentence that I've been saying it since, like, last year, and it's still not working.
That's because it still hasn't been plastered on a billboard everywhere.
God, I wish it had been a hit so we could have had that.
No, but that's the thing. If somebody paid to do that, maybe Jason Derulo would stop making songs. Please, someone do that.
The thing is, like everything, America gets all of the good things before us. And in this case, that is the DVD and Blu-ray of the movie Cats. American viewers have been absolutely thrilled by its many extra features. I have personally witnessed a photograph of Dame Judi Dench in a bright green mocap suit sitting in a giant cat basket.
Was that personally a joke? Was that intentional?
Maybe.
I'm referring to the per part of it.
Oh, dear. No, even I'm not that desperate for puns. But some outlets have been publishing news stories about Tom Hooper's commentary track. Yes, the director does a commentary track.
Oh.
I suppose he would have to, though. Does he spend the whole time just going, look, there was a good reason behind this. Look, there was a good reason behind this.
I'm sorry, okay? I don't know how many times I have to say
Stop turning up at my house.
Does he reference the butthole version of Cats?
The what?
Right, okay, I apparently have to do some exposition now.
Oh, absolutely you do.
The food grip explains the warmness.
So, someone who worked on the effects has said that early on in the CGI process, there was a weird glitch. I don't know whether it was a glitch in the machine or the machine was demonically possessed. Both seem likely. That made several of the cats look like they had realistic anuses.
Oh, my God. Do you reckon there was an anus designer? Holy crap. That's somebody's job. Oh, my God.
No, butthole remover.
Cats are very much like... Cats are all about sticking their arse in your face. So, I mean... It's like part of their thing.
Yeah, but
they would have to be an arsehole designer.
But in this case, there had to be a butthole remover.
Yes. Oh, it was someone's job to go and digitally paint out all of the rectums in
arse brushing. Oh my God.
Imagine that on your CV.
Just hours of scrutinising CGI analysis.
Just some shaking guy at the end of each day going, I've just seen so many birds. I've seen so many birds. Stop the birds.
That
person has the pet cat. And well, just, you can't look them in the eye.
Fortunately, the cats know that as well.
This came to the attention of YouTube's greatest daughter, Lindsay Ellis, who managed to get trending hashtag release the butthole cut.
Oh dear.
But, I mean, so I said but.
But anyway, the director's commentary.
The director's commentary. Yes, he gives some of the explanations Tom Hooper gives for the movie's more horrific elements, which I'm sure will make everything make sense.
Yeah.
Talking about the bit where Rebel Wilson Cat unzips her own skin and takes it off.
We are still talking about Cats, yeah?
Yes, we are. Yes.
This is an actual thing that happens in the movie Cats.
Because I don't remember that from the musical.
No, it was a Hooper original. He explains, this gag is kind of my own tongue-in-cheek way of referencing that I'm using digital fur as clothing, because Rebel actually unzips her digital fur to reveal it as clothing, but then the joke is underneath that she has more real fur, which of course is not real fur.
Thank God he explained it.
She's not a reptile. She's not a snake that sheds its skin. It's a cat.
How do we know what if David Icke was right?
So, is Tom Hooper, in fact, just an AI that he showed like, the script for every single Andrew Lloyd Webber musical to?
Well, I mean, let's hear another of his answers and see if we can work out whether or not he is a broken android. he notes the presence of, and I quote again, women playing cockroaches, whose only unusual trait is they have an extra pair of arms, in homage to the cockroach number of limbs.
I mean, of all the misogynistic quotes...
I'm sorry, God. He doesn't sound like a broken android. He sounds like the butthole of the opera.
I'm also confused. So ladies dressed as cockroaches, whose only unusual feat, like unusual to human, or unusual to cockroaches? Brain...
See?
It's one of those things, isn't it, where when I saw the cockroach scene in Cats, the last thing I was thinking was, I wonder why they have an extra pair of limbs.
Mm.
That was the bit that I could understand. The bit that I couldn't understand was literally everything else that was happening on the screen.
Mm. See, you can even sing it, the butthole of the opera is there.
What if all Andrew Lloyd Webber musicals have a butthole cut? What if there's a version of Starlight Express where they're just zipping around, staring up each other's fudge tunnels all the time?
There was a version of that, and it was called Starlight Express.
There was a version of that, and it was called Brown Star Express.
There was a version of that, and it was called The Human Centipede.
See, I saw a great mashup clip of Starlight Express, or of the S Express song that came out from Starlight Express that hit the charts. You know, with them going S Express.
Express.
You know, he was doing that, and then he went to train arriving at platform 4. Has been delayed due to brake failure or whatever.
I don't think I will ever stop obsessing over Cats, I've got to admit.
It's a global wound.
See, what,
we're just like dogs that keep licking that wound.
What it's amazes like me is they kind of took the whole idea of mocap and making people into CGI animals and actually made it worse rather than making it better. because they went from things like Dawn of the Planet of the Apes and Rise of the Planet of the Apes and War for the Planet of the Apes to
Which
Cats.
Is great. Yeah. Yeah.
It's just, it boggles my mind the amount of people involved with that film. I didn't know, but any of them were just, no, this is bad. We have to not release this. Burn all the film.
And can you imagine if, what's his name, who played Caesar and Gollum?
Andy Serkis.
Yeah, if Andy Serkis, what's his take on Cats? I would love to find out what he thinks about Cats.
Mm.
That's a very good point. Yeah, he should have a commentary.
Yeah, the Andy Serkis commentary would be amazing.
Just 2 hours of the guy going, oh, Jesus, what?
Andy Serkis as Ulysses Claw commenting on cats.
Yes, Andy Serkis weeps for 5 hours as a CGI cat Spider-Man down a wall.
Strange news in its normality for a bit. A bit of uncharacteristically normal news. A bit of news that makes you think, huh, someone made a reasonably solid decision.
Like a nice post-cats come down.
Yes. After 20 years of lobbying by Holocaust charities, Amazon has decided to stop selling Mein Kampf as well as anti-Semitic children's books by the Nazi-era author Julius Streicher.
I mean, is anybody else surprised that they would still be publishing Mein Kampf? Does anybody else think that was forbidden?
Like, it was forbidden in Germany for a long time.
Yeah, yeah.
I think it was only, was it last year or the year before, they actually allowed it to be sold in Germany again?
Ironically, one of the Guardian who ran this story have checked on Amazon, and there is still a German language edition of it available on Amazon, albeit a scholar's edition with notes and context.
Doesn't make it right, though.
I mean, to kind of understand why it's maybe gone on for so long from like the perspective of this is a historically important text.
Mm-hmm.
But it's also like the thing that made all the Nazis Nazis.
Nazi textbook.
The interesting
Nazi textbooks f*** off, as the dead Kennedys famously sang.
The interesting thing about Germany deciding to allow the sale of Mein Kampf again was that it preceded a new wave of right-wing sentiment across Europe.
I can understand why they thought, this has, you know, been dormant for a while. Maybe it's safe now, but man, alternative for Deutschland coming around just as they lifted that ban.
All I can say is, Germany, you didn't flush properly the first time. That's why it wasn't safe to go back in there.
Yeah, it's weird to think that there was that period back in, like, I don't know, 2012-ish, where we were like, yeah, the Nazis, they're over now, right, aren't they?
Yes, happy days. But my favourite detail about this story is the following paragraph, the following short paragraph, which simply says, a spokesperson for Amazon would not comment on what had prompted the effective ban on Mein Kampf, with the book listings simply replaced by a picture of a dog.
Did they replace Mein Kampf with What I Lick Before Your Face?
Oh, that would have been cute.
I'd be all for that. I would be perfectly fine with that if they did that.
Yes, because that's adorable.
What if they think, okay, we're going to get out of this controversy, we're going to replace Mein Kampf with a picture of a lovely good boy, and then it turns out that they've replaced it with a picture of Blondie, Hitler's Labrador.
Wow.
Exactly what they didn't want to happen.
Oh, that dog that looks like Hitler.
I think it's like they're part of their new Nazi combating strategy. Going, right, okay, you want to spread your doctrine of hate, fine. But you have to explain it all to this good boy. With his big soulful eyes.
I often feel the war could have ended sooner if there'd been like a front of Labradors marching towards Germany.
Yes. If before you took a shot at the enemy, you just had to like pet a sausage dog for a bit.
Yeah. Suddenly the whole thing just doesn't seem worth it, does it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I saw a dachshund the other day. It was adorable.
Aww. Oh, they're such nice dogs.
One used to come into the shop where I worked, and it was called Frank Sinatra.
Wow.
I mean, his owner brought him in. He didn't just walk in and go, all right, I'll have a paper.
That wasn't a bit of the story. That's not extraordinary, I've got to admit.
I was just thinking, did the dog walk in and go, start spreading the news?
do strutting.
Can you imagine a Datsun doing a thanks and after strut on his teeny tiny little spotty legs?
That's exactly what's going through my head right now.
I'm leaving my urine on
posts. No. Is he also wearing a tiny bow tie? I think he is.
Come on, guys, be serious. I'm sure the dog is only named after Frank Sinatra because it has serious ties to the mafia.
You wouldn't want to mess with it, that's true.
It's got big friends.
Great Dane.
German Shepherds, you know, Dobermans, Rottweilers.
Oh, to finish off on, we have something that we haven't really done much of, a sort of little light obituary where we take a major cultural figure who passed away recently and zoom in on the silliest part of their lives. In this case, it's Terence McNally, the late playwright who died at the age of 82 of COVID-19, who wrote Love, Valor, Compassion, Frankie and Johnny at the Clair de Lune, and many others. He was memorialised all across the media, including a local newspaper in the Texas town of Corpus Christi, which noted that he went to university there and had strong Corpus Christi connections, including mentioning the region in several of his plays. What they didn't mention was what the play about Corpus Christi was about, which prompted him to become embroiled in one of the silliest chain letters of the pre-internet era. The play was called Corpus Christi. It featured a group of 13 friends, all gay, who were patterned loosely after the 12 apostles and Jesus. It ended with the Jesus figure being called the King of the Queers and killed in a hate crime. And it was mildly controversial, as you may expect.
Mm-hmm. Just mildly.
Yes. It's he received death threats after it was performed. And it also reignited something which, although McNally doesn't seem to have realised this, was already circulating around evangelical circles, which was a rumour that a film was about to be produced that depicted Jesus as a homosexual, which, of course, Corpus Christi technically doesn't. It depicts a figure patterned on Jesus as gay, but not Jesus himself. But it did cause this old letter from the Yates start recirculating, and I want to read a bit of this out because it's great. It's just everything you could think of that would appall like mid-80s, like middle American evangelical.
Oh, this is going to be good.
Modern People News has revealed plans for the filming of a movie based on the sex life of Jesus. That's in capitals, that bit.
Oh, nice.
In which Jesus is portrayed as a swinging homosexual.
Swinging as well.
This film will be shot in the USA this year, unless the public outcry is great. Already a French prostitute has been named to play the part of Mary Magdalene, with whom Christ has a blatant affair.
How blatant, how blatant is blatant?
There are several things to unpack in that last sentence, aren't there?
I mean, was it not just a line ago that Jesus was a swinging homosexual?
Yeah. He could have been a male prostitute.
I suppose, yes. There's nothing, you know, nothing denying that status. I think the most offensive thing here is that it should say, with whom Christ has a blatant affair. Modern People News, as you've probably gathered, does not exist, and neither did the film. But after Corpus Christi premiered in 1998, Attachment, the mail was modified to say that it was based on a play that had run for some time. Con artists, they're canny.
Yep.
So yeah,
I really want to film about like groovy gay Jesus now.
Yeah, I kind of want to see that.
It's, I mean, you can only get a sort of Austin Powers image in your head when they use the word swinging like that.
Yeah, and groovy, and yeah.
This summer, get ready for the story of the Broves and the Fishes.
So, is that the lot?
No.
Oh.
No.
No, it's not the lot.
There's more.
Because remember, I promised you something.
Yes.
No. I'm very Maybe. Forgetful.
I promised you a quiz about obsolete words.
Ah.
Fabulous.
I chose Lovely. 10 obsolete words. And you wow. can, you have to guess what they mean. And I even gave you a preview.
Cool.
Your preview was bollockwart.
Oh, yeah.
I remember now, yeah.
It's funny.
As soon as you
put the childish obscenity in front of us, all of our memories are jogged.
Isn't it amazing?
Yes. Right. So, what do you think bollockwart means?
I think it's a herb used by medieval midwives to treat labour symptoms.
Anyone else?
I think it's somebody who is unhealthily obsessed with testicles.
Is it just a really annoying problem that will not go away?
Actually, it's a Middle English word, and it means orchid. It's an orchid.
What?
Really?
Wow, the Orchid Council were wise to rebrand that one.
Can you imagine walking into, some kind of garden centre and asking for bollockwort?
Or just like the big advert outside this Valentine's Day. Nothing says I love you like bollockwort.
Yes.
Amazing.
So, jar goggle.
Jar goggle.
Is that like medieval beer goggles?
I'll wait until everyone has guessed first before I tell you.
A jar goggle. Is it somebody who's just a drunkard?
Andrew, what do you think?
Is it something to do with alcoholism, but a different answer?
Is it a dyslexic gargoyle?
See, I suppose in a sense you're kind of in the right ballpark. It means to confuse or to jumble.
Ah.
That sounds quite reasonable, yeah.
It's a good word.
Okay. What about...
I guess it's like maybe where jargon comes from.
Possibly, yeah.
Maybe. Ooh, yeah.
Cunning, yeah.
That's a smart observation there, Andrew. All right, what about...
I mean, you don't have to sound that surprised. I literally have a degree in English language.
What about ludibrious?
Ludibrious.
Yeah.
L-U-D-I-B.
L-U-D-I-B.
Okay.
Ludibrious.
Somebody who is prone to playing games.
The old Ludo connection. Yeah. Is it ludibrious? Is it an unusually slippery surface?
Is it one of my old friends from school? Good old Ludibrious.
No, it's a person, thing, or situation likely to be the butt of jokes.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. Like, for example, if you're making a CGI blockbuster and it looks like all of your characters have rectums. It's ludibrious. Better get the CGI team in here.
Ludicrous has something to do with that.
Yeah,
You know,
Ludacris, one of the rappers who turned down a role in Cats.
The You know, I suppose if you want to doctor your CV so it didn't say butthole, you could say Ludibrious Hatch Remover. Okay, what about Jollocks? J-O-L-L-U-X.
Ah, Jollocks.
With an X.
Yeah.
I'm going to say it just means like, I don't know, fun and games, something like that. For up some Jollocks, lads.
Yeah, I think it'll be a raucous individual, a right bunch of Jollocks.
I think it's part of a ship.
Why,
that is always just a good guess, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah.
When in doubt, go nautical.
So everyone's guessed, have they?
Yeah. With mine.
It's actually a fat person. It's from the 18th century.
Jollocks.
It's a slang term. I suppose could give rise to the whole idea of fat people being jolly.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. Yeah,
that is most likely where it comes from then.
Okay, cockalorum.
Oh, now I've heard that word and I don't know what it means. Cockalorum.
Cockalorum.
Is it somebody who's just a bit sort of opinionated? And strutting and sort of a little bit arrogant, maybe?
Most old-fashioned words that have gone out of use are basically just insults, aren't they? Now we think about it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like
I think, a cockalorum is a Jobsworth, an officious person.
Mm.
Oh, I'm going to go similar to Sarah and say it's like a derogatory term for basically forum-esque gatherings. Oh. Where people are having debates, but are actually just, you know, making a load of noise and showing off.
So it's basically a piss take of Quorum, then.
It's basically
yeah.
Unfortunately, Andrew doesn't get a point this time, but I'm going to give a point to Graham and Sarah, because cockalorum literally means a braggart, a person with an overly high opinion of him, of themselves.
Ah.
They basically said that. Like plural.
But what would the plural of cockalorum be? Would it be cockalori?
Cocksalorum.
I'm pretty sure this is part of the lyrics to the Lonely Goat Herd we're coming out with here.
Okay. What this one I'm not sure how to pronounce it, so I'm gonna call it Grok. Because it sounds like croak, but with a G.
So
G-R-O-A-K.
G-R-O-A-K, yeah. Grok.
Grok, okay. Grok. Is it a type of overcoat for a child that incorporates the room that they are going to grow into?
Oh, so a growing cloak. Grok, I see.
Is it a measure of drink?
Hmm. Interesting one there, Graham. That's a groat, isn't it?
No, that's a coin. Currency, isn't it? Yeah.
Is it when someone dies, therefore croaks, but specifically they get eaten by a bear?
It is too silent. Well, it's bizarre because this is a word that could literally come back into fashion now. The Koreans... the Korean version of it would probably be called mukbang. It's to silently stare at someone as they eat, hoping they will invite you to join them.
Right. That's very specific.
Exactly.
It is indeed.
And the Koreans made YouTube sensations of them.
Yeah, how are we going to explain to future generations what mukbang meant?
So, anyway, titty nope.
God.
Tissy nope. I mean, according to Modern News Magazine, what Jesus was.
Was it a Native American tribe?
Titty nope. Is it like the opposite of a hoarder?
Oh, interesting, interesting.
A titty nope. Somebody who laughs a lot.
Oh, that's good.
Clean. It's a small quantity of something left over.
Of course.
So a titty nope of flour, a titty nope of rice. I don't know.
I will not be using this. It's no bollock wars. I'll put it that way.
All right. What about a snout fair?
A snout fair, it's when you're in a rough part of town, you don't have any money, so you agree to pay somebody by allowing them to punch you in the nose.
Is it just something that smells really nice?
Like, yeah, that's what it sounds like.
This orange is a right regular snout fair.
Is it a social occasion where the rich people hang out to try and intermingle and find marriage partners?
I'm so tempted to give you a point, but unfortunately I can't, Sarah, because a snout fair is a good-looking person.
Ah. Right. I suppose some people do have really cute noses, like Carrie Mulligan.
Can you imagine, though, if they use that in the modelling business? This person's a real snout fair.
Yeah, that's a workplace harassment lawsuit waiting to happen, exactly. Isn't it? Nobody wants that.
Okay, what about Malagrugrus?
Malagrugrus?
Yep.
Was it like a late period Miles Davis album?
Well, if it starts Mal, then it's probably a bad thing, isn't it?
Yeah. Yes, Malagrugrus.
Grug. Maybe it's like a Scottish floor covering. A meagre Scottish floor covering.
I'll say a malicious, knowingly false statement.
Say someone who... Bad. Because too much insects. I mean, that's where my heart has led me.
Are you just using a Ouija board for this?
Andrew, move this glass if you are.
It's a Scottish word, and it may be derived from an old Irish word. It literally means dismal.
That's much simpler than the old.
Can I get a point for Scottish?
Well, but, it is dismal. Too many insects.
Okay. Final word. We're doing not very well with this quiz, are we?
No.
Quokka wodger.
That's an Australian mammal.
It does sound like it, doesn't it?
Yeah. Oh, they're so cute, the quokka wodgers.
Quokka wodger. Definitely sounds like some kind of like old or middle English term for like a sheep thief.
That's good, yes. I'll say kitchen maid.
Unfortunately, no points again. It's from the 1850s, and it refers to a wooden puppet that was controlled by strings.
So very close.
I'm shocked we aren't getting more of these correct.
So, what was it?
Wait, before we tally up the scores, I have a counterpoint. All language is, in fact, inherently meaningless, except for the meaning we ourselves give it. Therefore, all of us get 10 points, because any definition we give a word is just the right definition, if we want it to be.
Oh, man, he's nice. Using the rarely used René Magritte defence.
Yeah, and somewhere he's got Johnny Cochran just in case he needs him. Oh, all right, 10 points all round for actually trying.
Did any of us actually get any points?
The closest you got, I think, was Jagoggle, which was the too confused to jumble one. But I think the one that we probably will use is Bollockwart. because it's such fun to say as well.
It's memorable.
Yeah. And, you know, the medical term for testicle is orchid, so...
Orchid-o.
Did you just look that up?
No, I did a medical terminology course once.
Wow.
Wait, is the actual medical term for testicles orchid?
It certainly is.
Is it really?
Yeah.
Okay, so what would that be, etymology? Orchid etymology. Orchis.
Yeah,
is it round?
The medical term for castration would be an orchidectomy.
Wow.
See, all of that...
Well, no, I certainly feel awkward about all the clients who came into the physio and complimented us on our lovely big orchid.
That's just the one.
All I can say is all of those depictions in romance novels and in movies where you have romantic tryst and then a flower petal falls off the flower, all of that has taken on a totally different meaning now.
Yes.
Orchids, literally testicle plant.
Oh, wow. I don't know how to finish this, Graham.
Let's just press on to the end, and in 2 weeks' time, everyone will have forgotten that this happened.
So that is us done for this week, isn't it?
Yeah.
How do you follow up testicle flowers? You could follow it up by listening to our other episodes of Literary Loitering, which you'll find on our website or on all good podcast providers. And you'll also find us on iTunes. If you're heading to our website, you'll find other stuff as well. Reviews of movies and video games and all sorts of other stuff. And our Patreons, if you want to show your support, you can do that. That's it from us for this time. Until next time, I've been Rob.
I've been Graham.
I've been Sarah.
And I've been Andrew.
No ifs, no buts.
No, well, no.
Quite literally in cats.
CGI.
Right, we'll see you all later.
Lots of bollock warts, though.